What's up? Welcome to Canucks Talk here on Sportsnet 650. Jamie Dodd, Thomas Drance here. We are broadcasting live from the Kintec studio. Kintec Footwear and Orthotics working together with you in step. 650, 650 is the Dunbar Lumber text line. This hour of Canucks Talk is brought to you by Rack Steel. You need forklifts that perform under pressure, and pallet racking that maximizes your space. Visit them online at racksteel.com. Drance, what's going on, man?
Waiting with bated breath
for
more than a Riley Smith trade.
We are now 23 hours and 58 minutes away from the NHL trade deadline. Very exciting.
Brass tacks. And obviously still quiet around the Vancouver Canucks. This is a team that sort of expected today to be a pivot point in the market anyway. I think we are seeing that shakeout. Obviously, Brock Besser is the main focus. He should be the main focus. But we can see that there's a Carolina Hurricanes team that's clearly holding up the market for scoring wingers. So you in for some circle back? You ready for circle back season?
You know I love circle back season.
This is the first of two official NHL circle back seasons.
Yes.
The second one, of course, comes with your own UFAs.
Yes.
In late June.
Yep.
So let's enjoy a little spring circle back.
Love to circle back. So much to get into today. We'll talk actually to Ryan Lynn, Vancouver Giants defenseman, at 12:30, which is exciting.
They made the playoffs.
Yeah, and I mean, he's having a fantastic year as a rookie defenseman.
Yeah, he's sick.
So, you know, highly touted NHL draft prospect for years in years to come. Ryan Lynn will join us at 12:30 from the Vancouver Giants, and we'll check in with Brendan Batchelor at 1, of course, the voice of the Canucks here on 650. We'll take your texts as well. Well, but right now, let's go to the whiteboard.
All right, now, fellas. Hey, let's focus up, huh?
It is your daily deep dive into what's up with the Canucks. Today is March 6th. The headline is the Canucks. They beat the Anaheim Ducks 3-2 at Rogers Arena last night. And a desperately needed 2 points. I called that one a 4-point game going into it, and I think that was true. And the Canucks, you know, it wasn't always pretty in that game, that's for sure. But they beat the Ducks, they hold on, and they get the very important 2 points. Do we want to talk about the game at large at all, or do we want to go right into the PD report?
What's the PD report?
The PD report. We got to check in game by game.
Oh, man. Okay.
Do the stock ticker.
We have a lot of stuff that I have little appetite for to get into, apparently. That game, I really liked the Canucks' effort, right? I think they should have put it away earlier and not for some bad luck and some exceptional work first by John Gibson and then by Lucas Dostal. Like, to me, that was like a 6-2 game on merit. And, you know, the idea that it was like interesting late or close late, like it wasn't. The Ducks were as unthreatening as a Teletubby in a dark alley. You know what I mean? It's like, whoa, what's that shadow?
I don't know. If I saw a Teletubby in a dark alley, I'd be spooked.
But if you saw like a big shadow of a Teletubby in a dark alley, you'd be like, oh my God, this is the end of my life. And then it would like come up to you and be like, pow. And you'd be like, I'm fine. That's what the Anaheim Ducks were last night.
That's terrifying.
Yeah, that does sound terrifying. I gotta be honest.
Pow, pow, pow. And you'd just be like, whatever, man.
Aren't the Teletubbies like supposed to be super tall too?
Yeah, they're large.
Giant babies.
Apparently Tinky Winky is 8'11".
Wow.
Gentlemen, we are 12 hours away from the trade deadline.
Just saying. If an 8'11" person.
8'11", Jim Benning, drafting him in the second round.
If an 8'11" of any description or any demeanor silhouette approaches me in a dark alley, I'm spooked.
Yeah. Sis, 8'11", huh?
That's according to my Google search here.
My goodness. 8'11", we're drafting him in the second round. It's like, sir, this is one of four differently colored children created for children's television. Antenna protruding.
All anyway, right, let's go.
Point being, the Ducks played terrible hockey. I actually think that was one of the worst performances I've seen from an NHL team all season. And I don't just mean against the Canucks. I mean all season
it's
long.
It's funny because I think the last time you said that was the first.
Yeah, they suck.
Ducks game.
They suck.
The first
Ducks game.
I hate
watching them play. They were going glassing out, trailing by two in the third period. They don't suck in terms of the players on the team either. Just their approach to hockey offends me as a viewer. So I guess that adds like some context. I have some bias to like really dislike the conservative play style that they employ. They were also tired, and it was clear that they ran out of legs as that game went along. The Canucks were skating circles around them all evening. It was a game that shouldn't have been as close as it was. It shouldn't have taken as long as it did. I think the Ducks set a Guinness World Record for a number of icings in the game. There was one of the goals scored included two Ducks or Canucks players behind the Ducks goaltender, pushed there by Ducks players. The challenge took 25 minutes off my life. Like, that's time I'm never getting back. I honestly ended that game just a little bit annoyed by the viewing experience. I was impressed by the Canucks, but I just thought it was dreck to watch. And by the way, not necessarily because of Vancouver. Like, I'm not criticizing the Canucks for it. I thought
they had jump.
They played well. I think when they come out and work the way they did in Seattle and in Anaheim, they actually can generate. You know, I really do think like one of the reasons that this team has sunk to the bottom, and there's more to it. Injuries have played a role. Trying to win low event hockey has played a role. Yeah,
fundamental personnel limitations.
But to an extent, but fundamentally, it's that this team hasn't been able to maintain a high enough work rate to generate. Like that's the fact of the matter, in my opinion. I just don't think this team has worked hard enough, consistently enough all season, and that's why they can't generate. The last two games you've seen proof positive. They've brought their work boots and it's looked good.
Mm-hmm.
And even if they lost the Seattle game, they were threatening consistently. And it's because they worked as hard as you need to work to score in the NHL. Like, I don't know what else to say about it, which also annoys me because as bad as this Ducks team is, that game mattered in early March, you know? So I don't know. There was nothing about it that made me happy, Jamie. And then let's move on to Elias Pettersson. He won a bunch of draws.
Yep.
Played well, had some jump, controlled play 5-on-5. Here's the truth.
Didn't register a point.
Here's the truth. If you're looking at your TV and squinting and being like, that's better, he's not back.
So here's what
it'll jump off the screen and grab you by the lapels and shake you when Pettersson's at his best.
I try to apply the standard of how would we react? How would we judge any given performance from Elias Pettersson if he played that game in the middle of his best season? So like from, you know,
exactly
January 2023 or January 2022 to January of last year, like that 2-year stretch, how would we react? And that in the case of the game last night, I think we would have no reaction. And I mean that both in a positive and negative sense. You know what I mean? Like, he would not have been a talking point in any way coming out of that game if it had happened in the midst of one of his best seasons. We'd probably, hey, great faceoff work from Elias Pettersson. You wouldn't be like, oh, wow, he was really on top of things tonight, because he wasn't. He didn't put up a point. But you also wouldn't be coming out with a deal of concern or thinking like, oh, wow, Pettersson was really off his game, which that latter reaction is exactly how you would have reacted to so many of his games earlier this season. So in a sense, it is progress, but it's also what if you try to apply it to the standard he has previously set, it's just a totally nondescript game. So yeah, progress, sure, but also fundamentally kind of nondescript, and he needs to start producing as well. That's the standard I'm going to try to hold for the rest of this season and beyond on Elias Pettersson. How would we react to the performance if he did it in the middle of one of his best seasons? And again, that one last night, I just think a totally nondescript performance relative to his standards. Like, it wouldn't be a talking point. With the face-offs. Yeah. People give him credit for the face-offs,
well,
which
for
is
sure. But the Ducks also are a super young team down the center of the ice. I do think he's modified his face-off move a little bit. So hopefully that's like a sign of things to come.
Mm-hmm.
You know what I mean? And not just a one-game sort of like a one game sort of thing. But here's the truth of the matter. Okay, on the season, do you want to guess what the Anaheim Ducks team faceoff percentage is?
46%.
44%.
Woo!
Dead last in the league. So
yeah,
like let's keep this in context. Nice performance, but you expect a 26-year-old first line center,
yep,
who, you know, entering this season had like the 7th shortest Selke odds to have a game like that every now and then. Especially one of those games where you're dictating play, but they're hanging around for, you know, reasons that mostly relate to the hockey gods having a laugh at your expense. That first goal, by the way, that first Ducks goal after the Canucks had outshot them 12-2, didn't that summarize like everything we've seen
that
from
was
this
tough
team across the last 10 days?
That was tough.
Like, this is ridiculous.
But, hey, they didn't fold against the Ducks, so there you go. That's something to hang their hat on.
Hey, if anyone is texting in, by the way, saying, you can't be positive about a win, it's like, guys, they got a Teddy Bluger deflected wrist shot goal and scored a deflection in which two Canucks forwards were behind the goalie.
Also, we were being positive. They played well.
Yeah, they played well.
Yeah. Who's being negative?
They played well, but that game was terrible to watch. Offended my sensibilities.
All right. The other headline is, as mentioned, we are now less than 24 hours to the NHL trade deadline. And we'll roll this part of the headlines in with the broadsheet and the rumor mill and all of that. But the big question becomes, will we see the Canucks trade deadline activity start today? I know you highlighted it on the show yesterday, kind of all quiet yesterday, but looking ahead to today, that you could see some action getting started. And as you mentioned, I think, you know, and Elliot Friedman had the report last night that the Hurricanes are exploring all options for Mikko Rantanen. And obviously, if you're a contending team in search of help scoring on the wing, you're going to be very curious about what happens with Mikko Rantanen, especially because his salary has already been retained once, right? So if Carolina is willing to retain again, it's a very cheap proposition to get done from a salary perspective. So that's a massive domino that teams just kind of have to check in on and at least wait a little bit to see what happens with it.
Well, especially because I think the same teams that could be Besser teams are the same teams that are right now Rantanen-focused teams.
Yeah, of course. And like scoring wingers. You need help scoring on the wing? You're going to look at Mikko Rantanen first.
Well, so Mikko Rantanen, will he or won't he? Raquel, will he or won't he? And then you get to even like the Brock Nelson, Kyle Palmieri tier, will they or won't they?
Mm-hmm.
The Islanders gauging their own sort of actions. And with Nelson, you've got the added complication that like a team in Winnipeg's shoes, just as an example, would look at Nelson and be like, well, he can play center, so he's a Namestnikov upgrade for us, and that's really what we need.
Yep.
But if we can't get that, we'd also have interest in another top six forward. But we need to figure out what's going on with the Islanders first. So, this is one where it could be a bit of a staring contest. The Canucks kind of were aware of this dynamic. I've been talking about this dynamic since, what, Tuesday?
Mm-hmm.
And as these dominoes fall, I think the Canucks are hoping that they'll get one of those offers that blows them away, that induces them to trade a player of Brock Besser's quality in the middle of a playoff race. I still would caption that as slightly more likely than not, just because I think there's a recognition on all sides that the gap between the two in terms of the valuation on Besser's next contract is wide enough that it's not likely to get bridged, even if they keep him. But, you know, you have to have a high bar, especially if part of what you're selling is a degradation of your playoff odds. That is what it is. So will be fascinating to see. I do think Suter and the defenders, Forbert and Soucy, take something of a backseat most likely here.
Yes.
Unless there's a motivated buyer, I think those are more likely to be Friday moves. I think today is kind of Besser watch. Tomorrow is the day where we might see more. But
having said that, I mean, Besser, it wouldn't shock me at all if he gets traded tomorrow either.
Oh, yeah, right, for sure. Today feels like Besser watch
sure.
to me, just as I go through my own professional priorities and refresh Twitter for the 19th time.
Yeah.
In the last 20 minutes. I thought that Dumoulin trade, by the way, Dumoulin who scored a 3-2 goal.
Yes, so the Ducks trade Brian Dumoulin.
That was the low point, I think, of my Canucks watching season, to be totally honest with you.
The Brian Dumoulin comeback goal? The Ducks.
Well, and just like the defensive coverage was pretty poor. Filip Hedl has been very good since his acquisition, but that play is one that, like, I won't be shocked if we see a durable reduction in his ice time. Not that Tocchet has other options, but that, just knowing the sorts of mistakes that get Nils Höglander benched, I'd think that's like up there.
Yeah.
In terms of just, it was just not an acceptable play.
So anyway, the Ducks trade Brian Dumoulin to the Devils.
Sorry, we're not going to get it. You don't have appetite for me bashing that game, huh?
No, I don't care about you bashing it, but it's just like, who cares about the defensive zone coverage on that goal?
Well, it's just when Brian Dumoulin scores against you to make it 3-2, it just makes me upset.
I get it. We moved on, though.
Okay.
We're moving on. Do you want me to carve out some time later in the show? You can do
it. I don't know.
You can list off all the things that annoyed you about that game.
I feel like I'm failing that, like, the angrier you get at random stuff, the bigger of a loser you are. Like, I'm failing that test in a major way today.
No comment.
Anyway.
No, it's all right. You're a passionate guy. Passionate guy. I get it. Anyways, the Ducks trade Brian Dumoulin, defenseman, to the New Jersey Devils for a second-round pick and also a prospect, kind of a mid-tier prospect in Herman Trapp.
How can you say that he's a mid-tier prospect with a name like that?
He was sixth, I think, in Scott Wheeler's system rankings for the New Jersey Devils. So, you know, not a high-end prospect, obviously, but There you go. Anyways, it continues, I think, to build this perception that it is a seller's market.
Yeah, and I'm interested in this guy, like Herman Treff. Treff. Yeah, for sure. I will eat at that. I think it's Treff. Anyway, I will eat there. He's 6'3" winger, yep, who's hanging around at the SHL level at 19.
And he was a third.
Sign me up.
He was a third round pick.
Sign me up.
In this most recent draft.
He's like a Fernstrom quality prospect.
Yes. Yeah, exactly.
That's a good prospect.
He was a third round pick in the most recent draft. So I think the most relevant, and his value hasn't gone down. So like that's basically a second and a third for Brian Dumoulin.
Right.
You know what I mean?
Who is materially not as good as Carson Soucy.
Yes.
Like materially
and
not as good.
And he's a rental.
And he didn't even outscore Carson Soucy last night. They both got one.
That's true. So if you're just basing it on last night, like these guys are equally productive.
Even if you are basing it off of just last night where Brian Dumoulin scored a clutch third period goal for his team, he still didn't outscore
Carson Soucy.
Soucy
scored the winning goal. How about that?
Carson
Check
Soucy,
that out, GMs.
Materially better. Materially better.
Yep.
Flat out. So if that's the price here, if now the Devils might have prioritized Dumoulin because, you know, he does have Stanley Cup winning experience. Noted good dude.
Mm-hmm.
That does matter. But Susie's better. So if those are the sorts of prices, like in the wake of that Tampa Bay Lightning Bjorkstrand trade, I was sort of pouring cold water on the idea of this overheated seller's market. But if that's the price for Brian Dumoulin,
yeah,
a player who is literally addition for subtraction by the Ducks, who've been going with a completely insane rotation of Pavel Minchukov and Olin Zellweger this season, like literally they cleared a logjam and picked up two quality assets for it. That's the sort of thing where
if you'd asked me about Dumoulin last week, I would have been like, oh, classic guy that goes for a fourth like an hour before the trade deadline.
Totally.
On Friday.
Exactly. Right.
You know what I mean? And instead, it's a second and a third. And that's like that's pretty significant. Now they retain and all that. But again, I think the other thing, too, is the extra year on Carson Soucy's deal. Now, it's a little more complicated because he has the full no trade. Although I know Rick Dhaliwal mentioned that, you know, there's some wiggle room there. It's not as if he's saying only Western Canada.
No. Everyone has to forget the gaslighting of the early Benning era and the like, oh, we can't do anything because of no move, no trade. Guys with no trade clauses, the moment they are looking at time in the press box or time being reassigned to the American League or falling out of favor, tend to get pretty flexible. Mm-hmm. Still, it's a slightly more complicated deal to execute, but it is by no means bulletproof.
Yeah, it doesn't take it off the table.
They
the
just
idea
traded
of trading
JT
Carson
Miller
Soucy.
For with an NMC on it.
Mm-hmm.
Like, come on, what are we talking about?
And Darren Dreger reporting that a lot of teams are calling on Carson Soucy. So I think that's the Dumoulin trade is a really interesting data point. I would be shocked if one of Derek Forbort and Carson Soucy aren't traded by the deadline, just given the number of defensemen they have right now, even with Quinn Hughes' health, with Lander coming. It seems like a bit of a layup, especially with these prices, to trade one of them. You're not even necessarily putting that big a dent in your playoff chances. So with the Brian Dumoulin one as the latest data point there, keep an eye out for Carson Soucy and Derek Forbort and what they do before the deadline. We mentioned also in the broadsheet, Elliot Friedman reporting the Hurricanes exploring all options for Mikko Rantanen. So we'll see how that develops over the course of the day. Because there's really, you know, first of all, I'm a little skeptical that the Hurricanes are actually going to flip him. I think at this point, like,
you think it's an information gathering
you're
exercise?
You're so hungry for a long playoff run, like to the Stanley Cup. At this point, I know they've been to the Eastern Conference Finals, but to break through and go to the Stanley Cup and challenge for the Stanley Cup, you didn't give up a first-round pick for him. You are going to move on from Natchez at some point anyway. Why not just – it's not like they don't have experience letting superstar players walk and finding a way to be effective anyways. Why not just keep him? Like, sure, do your due diligence. If there's an offer that's just too good to be true, whatever, but why not just keep him and try to go on a run with him? So that's how I would expect it to play out. We'll see. At some point, teams are either going to come to the conclusion that this isn't happening or they're going to get tired of waiting and they're going to see what their other offers or what their other options are out there. We'll see when that point happens, when teams reach that point. But that's how I would expect the Rantanen situation to play out. And we'll see when the winger market kind of gets jump-started around that.
Yeah. And in the meantime, you know, lukewarm has been the description that I've given about the Brock Besser market. Have no indication as of this morning that that's changed, but perhaps as dominoes fall, right, a team gets hungry to add a proven playoff producer like Besser to their lineup. Otherwise, yeah, it'll be interesting to see the reaction around these parts if the Canucks do, in fact, pass through the deadline quietly.
It sure will. I also want to mention that Rick Dhaliwal on Donnie and Dolly today said he wouldn't be surprised if teams are calling on Connor Garland, which is a name we haven't really heard out there. But now that we're out of the flat cap era, right, the fact that he has one more year left at 4.9 goes from, and with him playing well, it goes from not necessarily being a detriment or a liability, but something that could interest teams. Now, I don't expect them to trade Connor Garland, especially not if they're also looking at a Brock Besser deal and already depleting what they have on the wings. But I do think even just being willing to consider something like that kind of speaks to them being both in the buying and selling mode. Because that means, okay, maybe we're trying to sell our UFAs but acquire players with term. But I think when you're in that mode, you're just generally open to more things. You're generally open to being more creative and considering non-traditional deadline deals. So I wouldn't bet on Connor Garland going, but I wanted to pass that note along. And again, I think it speaks to just the position the Canucks find themselves in. There's a lot of things they could potentially do in the next 23 and a half hours here. We'll see what actually materializes from it. Lineup notes, no practice today, which I know raised some people's eyebrows because Rick Tocchet yesterday after the game kind of alluded to wanting to practice some things today and tighten some things up from the game last night. Is there anything to it, the no practice, that we should read into and what it might mean for their trade deadline plans?
I don't think so. They play tomorrow, so you can have a morning skate.
Yeah.
You know, the general rule is get steel to touch ice once between practices or between games, right? So whether it's a practice or a morning skate, you want to do at least one of them. Sometimes you want to do two, but really, if you're going to do a practice, you're going to do an optional skate. So you have the option to do it.
Which, to be fair, is typically what Tocchet prefers. The practice on the off day and then the optional skate.
Yeah. But the team's been away a long time. And, you know, if they had a good week of work and you want to give some guys some time off, especially given the stress that comes with being a bubble team at this time of year, you know, you can totally understand that. Club, though, will basically have media availability now with players, like, right as the deadline passes. So that's sort of an interesting wrinkle. Like, even if you think it was to do the team a service by sort of not having, like, Brock Besser doesn't have to speak again, right? Doesn't have to go through the rigmarole of guy who everyone's talking about as the deadline approaches. Might have to speak tomorrow.
And normally when they do their skate usually, what, 10:30 on a game day?
That's what I'm saying.
And then Tocchet is speaking at, like, 11:15.
Yeah.
So that's right. That's not even after the deadline. That's like, hey, right, is Pugh Suter going to be in your lineup tonight kind of thing?
Yeah,
you know what I mean?
My point being that, like, if you were trying to strategically plan things for with the deadline in mind, you know what I mean?
Yep.
You'd rather practice today and go optional and or no media availability at all. Like no skate whatsoever.
Yeah.
Right. When I worked for the Panthers, Sasha Barkov, you couldn't call it an optional because he'd go on the ice no matter what. So we started calling them mandatory off ice. Yeah. Mandatory off ice skate that's how you do it if you were really worried about, like, the information protection thing. So that's not what it looks like to me. I think this is probably just two good efforts, good week of work. We've been on the road a long time. Take a day off.
Take a break. Playoff standings update. Canucks move into a tie, except Calgary has the tiebreaker, but both teams have 67 points in 61 games. Calgary with the regulation win advantage by one, so they remain in the final wild card spot. St. Louis won last night as well, but the Canucks win that big four-point game, so now 6 points up on the Anaheim Ducks. Bringing it up just to annoy you. And per Dom's model, the playoff chances tick back up to 62% for the Canucks.
Interestingly, even though they won, you're beginning to see the gambling market, which has been extremely bullish on the Canucks throughout this season, begin to materially soften. In fact, today, you can get the Canucks to miss the playoffs at minus 105. That's the first time that you've not been able to get even money or better betting against the Canucks to make the playoffs all season long. And you know I've been tracking it closely. So minus 115 today to make the playoffs, minus 105 to miss. That's the first time all year that the Canucks have been worse than even money to miss the playoffs. And just to recap the teams around them, Blues 4.25-1, Utah 4.5-1, Calgary Flames 2.2-1, to make the postseason.
All right, that's the whiteboard for today. We will take a break here. Up next, Ryan Lynn from the Vancouver Giants out of Richmond, BC. He joins us next here on Canucks Talk Sportsnet 650.
If you have an 8'11" person,
8'11" Jim Benning drafting him in the second round.
Why isn't anyone taking Cole Lane?